I didn't want to wake you up, but I really want to show you something.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Underrated, a podcast where we discuss films that are underrated, underappreciated, or ones that have slipped under the radar and passed most people by. I am joined by Ariel Ortiz.
Hello.
And Alan Torres.
Hey, what's up everybody? How's it going?
And I am Derek McDuff, and we make up the Undercast Company. We are going to be talking about the film Where the Wild Things Are, a 2009 adaptation of the 1963 novel by, or not novel, children's book by Maurice Sendak, with the film written and directed by Spike Jonze and co-written by Dave Eggers. When the film was released, it failed to make money at the box office, almost making exactly what its budget was, meaning it lost about $100 million. It also drew a very mixed response from audiences and critics, particularly audiences who felt that the film was too dark for a children's film, which, ironically enough, really mirrored the initial response to the book when it came out back in the 60s by various parents. This is my pick. I picked this one because this episode is going to be dropping on my birthday. This book was my favorite book as a young child. It meant a lot to me, and this movie came out when I was in college. I was about 18 or 19 when it came out. I remember this is a writing class about fantasy and sci-fi, and the teacher showed it to us, and I was immediately taken back to my childhood, as I was again when I rewatched it for this. But I was wondering, you know, what did you guys think of it, and what's your history with it, if you have any, with the film and the book?
I have zero history with this. With the book, I actually never read it as a kid. It was always like one of the books I kind of knew about, but never really got around to reading it. I actually like quickly read it right after watching this movie. So for me, I don't know if it's because like I don't have that kind of like history with it, but overall, like I enjoyed the movie. Visually, it was incredible. I did understand like the characters and what they had expressed and represented to the character Max, and they're essentially clearly like Carol is very much Max in this you know, in the reality scenario, and like is it KX or
KW? Yes.
Is his sister, and then you know his mom, and then mm-hmm. Her boyfriend are the other two,
the owls.
I don't think the owls. I think the monsters that like were like in love.
I would say the owls are probably more like his sister's friends.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. The owls are more his sister's friends. But I like reading the book afterwards. I find it very impressive of how they like took that book that is essentially like, I'd say like not even 100 words long of a story.
It's 10 sentences long. I think it's about 200-300 words.
Oh, okay. But not
still,
even,
yeah.
Yeah. Like taking that, like just that little of source material and turning it into this was, I found, very impressive. The voice acting of the characters, like led by John Gruffalo, John Gallofini?
James Gandolfini.
I'm sorry. Yeah, James Gandolfini was like incredible. I really did enjoy like the monsters themselves, but to speak truth, I did not enjoy Max overall as a character.
I have things about to say about that motherfucker.
He's very much a child that I definitely was not. I definitely was not allowed to be that kind of kid. And I definitely do not ever want to be that kind of kid or want a kid like that. I did understand where he was coming from. Like it seemed like he, you know, his father passed away, and then that, like, you know, his his siblings have grown up, and I did find connection to that. But I guess, like, in my personal experiences as a kid, like, I went in the opposite direction of, instead of being a nuisance to and, like, out lashing out as a child, I kind of, like, pulled more further back into myself as a child. So definitely, like, I see Max is on the opposite spectrum of my own childhood, because I do have, like, older siblings who I had experienced, you know, not spending much time with them for varying reasons. But yeah, so, like, I just didn't connect with him in that way. I did understand where he was coming from. I didn't understand that he was, like, hurting and things like that. But overall, I don't think his actions were correct. And I didn't really care, even in the book. I feel like his actions are kind of not, like, they're not corrected in a way. Like, I guess, like, in the book, maybe a little bit better, because he's still, like, essentially grounded in his room. He was sent up to his room. But in the movie, he's greeted back with his mom, which is okay. But he's greeted with a slice of chocolate cake, which is very much, like, I feel like is not the correct way to...
That's kind of the point.
Address this kid, and that this kid is going to continue to lash out and be... I'm hoping that he did learn from, especially from experiencing, like, his mirror self with Carol's character. I'm hoping, but I don't know. And I don't trust fully that he did actually learn his lesson. I really do hope that he did. But yeah, overall, I did enjoy the characters, like, very much so, the monsters at least. And very much, yeah, they were very humanized and like told this story of, like, of all these different people that Max has interactions with. And yeah, like, I think it's just kind of like it was a very human experience of a story, I would say. And that's what I really enjoyed of it. And the visuals, the sets, wherever they filmed, were, like, incredibly beautiful. And, like, yeah, like, what you would expect from, you know, a world where monsters live. And then just one little tidbit that I, like, found, like, really, like, funny, or I don't know how coincidental it was, but going back to a movie that we had that was one of my choices for this podcast of Begin Again, we have the pairing of I don't remember her name. I keep forgetting it.
Oh, Mom, Kathleen Keener.
Kathleen Keener and Mark Ruffalo as a couple in this.
When
as
did
well
Begin Again come out?
The movie Begin Again? I don't know. Let me check.
I think it was after this, because this was 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably 2013.
Begin Again. Oh, a little bit after this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like that little, like, cameo, because like I didn't catch it, like, the first time I saw it, and it wasn't until, like, he got to the island and I was like, who are playing these, you know, like, monsters? And I'm looking through IMDb and I'm like, Mark Ruffalo, as, and then it says, like, Mom's boyfriend or something like that, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. So yeah,
barely a cameo, but it's so perfect.
Yeah, but by his words, it seems like this isn't the first time that Max has acted out in this way, because he sounds like he's very concerned of, like, he can't keep doing this, you know, to you, like, can't keep lashing out and stuff like that. So that's how I feel about the movie. Yeah. I did enjoy it. I liked the story of it. I'm just worried, and along with the book, I'm just worried if the morals came through. Especially with the book, it's very ambiguous of a.
That's kind of the point, though.
Yeah.
The book, and that's why people got so mad at it, is like, oh, this is not something that's teaching morality. And so many books at the time were like, well, we just need to make books to teach kids how to be good. And Maurice Sendak was like, fuck all of that. I want to make a book about, like, what it feels like to be, like, a kind of angry, lost kid, and how kids aren't perfect and how parents aren't perfect. But I'll get into it more. I'll go into butthole spiel later. But what do you have to say, Alan?
Well, I don't want to ruin your birthday, but
unfortunately, I didn't really dig it that much. I was kind of underwhelmed. I have no history with the book. I remember looking at the book cover all the time as a kid and going, damn, it looks really cool, but I never like got around to reading it. And I don't know, it just... I think I had expectations in my mind. I was expecting something, and like I kind of felt like I was watching kind of like Catcher in the Rye. Like, what if like Holden Caulfield was like younger? Mm-hmm. And I fucking despise Catcher in the Rye, and I
so
fucking
do I, hate but
Holden Caulfield so much.
I do too, which is why Caulfield. I kind of
this kid could I, grow could grow up as Holden.
I don't
Caulfield.
Know.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I think Holden Caulfield is more like what you were describing, Ariel. Well, Holden Caulfield is very, very insular and doesn't. I really get Holden Caulfield.
Holden Caulfield makes up stories and dude, like. But... and to the discretion of everybody else, he calls everybody phony because he himself is the
he's
phony.
A fucking
yeah,
phony.
That's the whole
a,
point of the book. I got that.
Yeah,
he's a
yeah.
fucking asshole.
Yeah,
and but yeah, no, I just felt like this kid. I'll be honest. The first 2 minutes, I was like, I want to punch the shit out of this kid. Like, I fucking hated his character so much, and I was like, oh man. Because like I was really hyped. I like Spike Jonze, you know. I loved him, you know, whenever he'd show up on Jackass. You know, he's a big producer for it, and I was always been very excited to see her. I still haven't gotten around to seeing her, and I heard a lot of great. Good. Yeah, I heard a lot of great things about it. So I was like, okay, you know what? I like Spike Jonze just seems to be right up my alley. And when I saw this, I was like, okay, like it's not a horrible movie. I just really hated Max, but the monster designs and the practical effects, oh, delicious, gorgeous, stunning. The cinematography was awesome. Everything was pretty great. It's just, there was I haven't read the book, so I don't get how the pacing was. I know you said it's only like 10 sentences, but I felt like I was just kind of like, but maybe that's what he wanted, was for you just to appreciate the monsters and like the cinematography and the designs and everything, like the perfect blend of CGI, practical effects, costuming and everything. And I was like, oh man, this is fucking awesome. Like, I love that stuff. And it was really great. I just was like, I kind of just felt like I was, nah, I don't want to say bored. I just kind of felt like I was waiting for something to happen. And like things happen, but I just kind of was like, oh, okay. And I can see why maybe it was a little bit difficult for audiences, because I feel like, you know, maybe some audiences might see the trailer and go, oh my God, like, you know, I read that book when I was a kid and I love the monsters and the monsters look great. And I think that pulled people in, but I think it kind of has like a little bit of a slowness to it, where I can see even some kids kind of being like, oh, what's going on? Like, I'm kind of just sitting here. You know, the monsters are cool, but what else is there? I feel like it was kind of like an adult art house indie movie for kids, if that's the best way I can say it. Yeah, like I feel like there was, I don't know, there's just something missing. It's not a horrible movie by any stretch of the imagination. I like I said, I just hated Max. That was it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just felt like I needed something. I couldn't figure out what it was, but like I will say, if there's any reason to see it, it's definitely for the monsters and the voice acting and like just the gorgeous visuals. But yeah, like I just feel like, I don't know, I felt like there was something missing for me. And again, like I said, I felt like maybe it was like a prequel to Catcher in the Rye in some weird way.
I can't disagree more, but okay. I fucking hate Catcher in the Rye. I fucking hate that book.
I hate that book with a passion, you know, like I said, but I don't know. There was just something about it, and it's sad because I was really looking forward to it. I was really, really excited for the movie, and I think it didn't meet what I thought it was going to be, but yeah, I don't know. I kind of want to hear what, you know, I wanted to hear what Ariel was going to say, and I wanted to hear what you were going to say, Derek, because I feel like maybe I missed something, or, you know, I don't want to like just fully be like, fuck this movie, or hate the movie, because I'm like, I feel like there was more, and I feel like maybe I didn't pick up on it. So I kind of really am glad that we're discussing it, because I'm kind of like, all right, what is it that I missed, or what is it that, like, I don't know, like, I'm really, really interested in hearing like why you love it so much.
Wait, one thing I wanted to add that I'm mm-hmm. kind of like popped into my head right now. I am going to try and like throw out a little bit of hope for Max, just on the fact that, like, okay, if Carol represents him, I think that we see a change in Carol at the end. Like, he runs out and joins the group while Max is going back home. And I think I'm mm-hmm. hoping, like, I'm going to try to interpret that as, okay, well, that means that Max is kind of like learned as well. I just like,
well, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And because it's like, I know that in that the book.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah. Because I know in the book, it's very much the thing. And then it's shown in the movie as well that he kind of like wants to input what he's feeling onto the monsters, which is kind of like make the monsters feel what he feels. And mm-hmm. so, like, in the book, in that way, he, like, tells them, you go to bed without food. Like, mm-hmm. like he was told, go to bed without food. And then this, he kind of, like, but I don't know if he was gaslighting.
Well, there's that whole scene where it does have that same scene.
He kind of gaslights the monsters.
Yeah, it has that scene where, like, she's like, you don't get angry at us. You can't say that back to me. But, yeah, I mean, this is definitely, like I was saying, a movie that, for me, was a really big thing because, you know, the book was so big. And Max, you guys were talking about how, you know, you don't like Max and how he's such a little shit, especially at the beginning. And that's, like I was saying, kind of the whole point, the whole idea is he is the kind of embodiment of just these confused feelings you get when you're growing up, just like where you're filled with anger and sadness and just guilt. Like when that beginning, it's such a like heartbreaking thing where he's like mad at his sister, so he just tears up the heart, and then like he's immediately like, oh my god, like what did I do, this thing that I made for my sister that meant so much to both of us, and I just ripped it up. And you know, he is just a kind of wild shitty kid, and I think so few books and films capture that feeling, and what this movie does so well capturing that feeling, and also just what was portrayed in the book, is it's just the vibes of it, and you're just kind of living in the vibes of this story world that has been so uniquely created by Maurice Sendak. And it's sparse, you know, obviously the kids book is very sparse, but I think that the movie is very sparse. You do see just kind of the monsters, and there's, you know, I think it's not an accident that the poster and like the / DVD cover is just him, Max and Carol walking through that empty desert, and he has that whole speech about, you know, oh, it's all going to become dust. And Maurice Sendak was kind of like obsessed with death and just what happens. And I just love all of that and sitting with the vibes. And I'm kind of curious, like, what you would think of it in like a couple days, Alan, because I know you just literally watched it. And I think this is a movie that you do kind of need to sit with. And I think that's the case with a lot of Spike Jonze's stuff. It's just kind of weird and cerebral, and it's not intellectual. It's more like you can't really think it out. You have to just kind of feel it. And this movie just absolutely hits me in the feels every time I watch it. Comparing it once again to the book is that it's kind of, you know, weird, and Jones is this, I think, one of the few filmmakers who could do all of this justice, because he, you know, just like Sendak based the book on his childhood, Jones based it on his feelings as a kid, and that's why Sendak wanted him to do the movie, because for years and years this was in development, and then finally got done with Jones. And I was watching a bunch of behind the scenes stuff, and there's this really good short documentary Jones actually did about Maurice Sendak's life. And one of the things that Sendak says in one of these behind-the-scenes things is that it maintains its peculiarness. And I think that is so accurate, because it is just so unique and bizarre in a way that feels not at all artificial. Like, it feels just like something that came absolutely from a kid's mind. And Jones is kind of like a big kid. That's why he's like hanging out with all the Jackass guys. He's best friends with the Beastie Boys. That's where he got his start, is doing Beastie Boys music videos. He just wants to have fun, and as well as all the other emotions that come out of childhood. And I think overall, you know, I could talk about, you know, why this worked and this worked and this worked. But I think that this is more of a movie where you just kind of have to experience it on a much more emotional and much less intellectual level. So yeah, it really hits me. I think all the indie soundtracks and vibes and the Carano just kind of all really work for me. It feels all of such a piece with what the movie is doing. I like that it doesn't really say, okay, this is a dream, this is a fantasy. Like, it definitely is. You can interpret that, because it's, but it never comes out and says, oh, this is when he's going to the fantasy world, this is when he's starting to imagine things. It's kind of just like, yeah, you are like a kid just going into his imagination like this. And for me, that's why it's such a big deal, and I wanted to talk about it on this episode that's coming out on my birthday. As I'm growing up, I'm 32 right now, I'll be 33 in the day this episode comes out, and which is just happens to be the same age that Maurice Sendak was when he first published this, and the book kind of changed his life.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mm-hmm. I agree with what you're saying, that I do like those aspects of the film just kind of being emotional, not intellectual. And I do like that it just kind of, he just kind of goes into it. Like, there's no explanation. I really did dig that a lot. Like, I was like, okay, makes sense. It's a kid's imagination. So I did appreciate that there was no explanation. There was just, he goes in and he goes out. Like, I was like, okay, I can dig it. But sorry, Ariel, what were you saying?
Oh, no, I do find some relatability to, like, the overall journey, the use of imagination to create this kind of world. And I think I share this with Alan, that it's just that Max as a character, at least for myself, I don't know about you, Alan, like, our upbringing is so vastly different to, I think, what Max's upbringing is, that it kind of takes it away from it, and sadly that allows us not really connect with the main character as much. That's why I really do hope, and I'd love to contribute to like telling the story of like a child that is more relatable to my childhood and to me, and that just kind of having, like you were talking about, like, you know, having all these feelings and emotions and anger and all that. It's like, yeah, I, as a child, had those feelings and had those, but it was such a more internalized journey for myself, keeping it to myself, crying. And it wasn't much so, like, partially, you know, parent kind of thing, upbringing like that, but then also just, like, on my own self and my own, like, dealing with problems, you know, very much like take it more internalize and like deal with it more self than acting out.
Well, can I say something to that? Because I think that this movie kind of plays on that, because I mean, I was like the same way. I kind of had pretty strict parents, and I dealt with it, I think, in the same way that you're kind of describing, and that Max does, like, he does act out, but then he he does kind of go and imagine this other world, and he kind of, I think that is when he is on the island, quote unquote, I think that is him internalizing this. He is kind of playing out his feelings about feeling like he's abandoned her by his mom and his sister, because that's, and he's angry about these things that really aren't anyone's fault, but they're just living their lives, but he's so mad about them, and him kind of coming to terms with this. And I think that's, it's, you know, it's very metaphorical about him kind of going to this fantasy world, and in that's how he internalizes things. Imagination is me being as someone who's very, very creative, and so I was always kind of like imagined great stories. That's how I dealt with a lot of these things in an internal way too.
I agree with both of you guys. Like Ariel was saying, I did have a specific type of upbringing where I was very lonely. I didn't have siblings. My sister wasn't born until I was like 11. So that was already like a huge gap, you know, 11 years difference. So there isn't much, like, you know, by the time I'm 20, she's like barely 10 years old and you can't really relate at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I do understand the loneliness. Like, that was something I could relate to, was absolutely being alone and being angry and not being able to like let go of those emotions, kind of being, you know, because I mean, I'm just going to say it out loud, that, you know, the elephant in the room is like, if I acted like that, I'd get my fucking shit kicked in. Like,
yeah,
I just, you know, that's what I'm going to say. If I fucking acted like that.
Like that. Yeah. When I acted like that.
Oh yeah. Slapped, you know, smacked with the belt. Fucking, you know, the chancla, the classics, but
the pinch.
Boy, if my dad called it the clamp, boy, I'm gonna clamp you. Better watch out.
Oh no, we don't get a warning. It just happens.
Yeah, you know that's the, you know, trauma, right, guys? But, yeah. So I get that aspect. You know, I agree with both of you guys, where I feel like it's not entirely like a separate feeling, but I think there's relatability in that aspect where. I get it. I understand being a kid where you're being very, when I was lonely, I was kind of a brat. You know, I cried about it. I was a big crybaby as a child. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends, you know, and I had a change at one point in time. But yeah, it was like, I understood that, where I was like angry all the time and depressed and lonely, because I'm like, holy shit, you know, why am I the way I am? And, you know, why does this happen to me, kind of thing? So I can kind of relate to that aspect. For the film and for Max's character.
Yeah.
I think maybe I just saw a little too much of me, where I was like a little angry with myself. I don't know if that happens to you guys when you read a book or watch film or television, where maybe sometimes the character might hit too close to home. Kind of how we were talking about with Miss Marvel, the first episode of Miss Marvel, where a lot of things hit a little too close to home, where I was getting fucking pissed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because it hits home, because you're like, fuck, that was me, or that's what I experienced. So I think maybe that's one aspect of it.
Yeah. No, I have the opposite. I kind of get drawn more to characters that feel more like me. And yeah, talking it through, like, and seeing it in this way of Max, I guess it's like very much like, maybe the, for us, like the motives are the same, but the action and the reaction, you know, is different. But yeah, now talking about it a little bit more and like kind of like getting a more sense of like the motive behind Max's actions, I'm getting a little bit more relating to Max as a character. I still don't like his actions, and I think that's where the barrier happens. But I think, like, yeah, now talking more, I think I'm like more connecting with his motives of why he does this kind of stuff. Yeah. So I could give the movie and the story that. The movie definitely works a little bit better than that. I think that the book is kind of like a little bit, I don't know, you have to, I feel like you have to take a lot of jumps to make the book more relatable to me, just because of the main gist of, at least for me, is like, you know, he treats the, it's from the book, in the book, he treats like the monsters like he was treated, and then he just gets lonely and then leaves, because he realizes that he has a good home and stuff like that. But yeah, but the book, the movie, I think is, I'm getting a little bit more, and that's why the movie's like really good. And yeah, it does, I think, deserve a bit more recognition, just for the fact that like Spike Jonze like took like a lot of, interpreted a lot into you know, this story that, like, yeah, is just 10 sentences. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think, Alan, what you were saying earlier about it feeling more like kind of an adult, like a little indie drama, I think it makes total sense because both the film and the book, I feel like they don't really want to try and be like, okay, well, let's put kids in a box and treat this like it's a different kind of story. Like, a kid's story is something else, and we got to talk down to kids. And that's where, you know, that title of that little short doc that he did with Spike Jonze, Tell Them Anything You Want, he's talking about kids. He's like, don't just treat kids like they're, oh, these are little kids and they need to be protected from the world. It's just like, no, talk to them like they're adults. And if, for this movie, it's like, yeah, this seems like an adult movie. Maybe it's for, like, older kids or something like that. Because it's kind of scary. It's pretty dark, but I think so is the book in many ways. And it really, like I was saying, captures all those dark feelings of childhood. And instead of being like, okay, well, we have to put this as a separate thing for kids, it's like, no, we can treat kids like actual people, you know? And that's something, I mean, I'm curious what I would have thought of this as a kid. It didn't come out until I was a late teen. But yeah, that I think is a really good point, and I think something that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's something I agree with too. I really like that. I like where we've been going with, like, kids movies or just having kids in general in films. They're not talking down on them as much anymore. I think this movie was kind of one of the first ones that kind of threw that shit out the window, because that's kind of one of the big reasons I don't like watching kids animated movies. Kind of how, like, we were talking before we were recording, we were talking about, like, Disney movies, and I don't like that shit. Like, it kind of gives me a little bit of a cringe factor. But what I liked about this was that I know it was for kids, and, like, I wasn't saying it as, like, a bad thing where I was like, this feels like a art house indie movie for kids, because that's exactly what it felt like. It wasn't, I felt like it was even challenging kids when they watched it to be like, hey, how do you feel about this? How do you interpret this kind of thing? And what I really love is that now with filmmaking and television, that we're going down this route of, like, we're treating child characters as, like, people, like you said, Derek, like, you know, where we have Stranger Things, fucking worldwide phenomenon, and that does exactly that. It respects the children characters, and it respects them into, like, you know, hey, they curse and they do stupid shit. Same thing with, you know, Stephen King's It, the book, and the new Machete movies, where I love that. I love that it was like, hey, kids talk like this. They say stupid shit. They get involved with dumb shit. And they learn. That's what it is to be a kid. You have to learn because you've barely been on this planet. And that's why I always gravitated more to Stephen King's It, because I love, like everyone usually says, that the child storylines are more interesting than the adult ones, because they're learning, they're going through these horrors and they're learning about themselves. And same thing with like Stranger Things, you know, these fucking kids are going through some really traumatic fucking things, but they're still living their lives kind of thing. I don't want to venture too much into those two, but I really do like that this film really didn't go down that, like, let me baby talk you, let me fucking treat you like a stupid little kid kind of thing. It was like, hey, like, this is what's going on. You relate to this kid or you don't, but, like, you're kind of seeing it through his eyes, and you're and I feel like a kid who would see, and maybe even if I saw when I was younger, maybe I'd appreciate it more when I was a kid, where I'd be like, hey, this feels more, I don't know, like it hits you a certain way, I guess, but it doesn't feel like you're being talked down to.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before we completely wrap up, too, I wanted to also just kind of circle back to what you were saying earlier, Alan, about the practical effects in this and how they really seamlessly blended the practical effects with CGI. And, you know, it looks so good because they did build all these huge animatronics, but they obviously, you know, touched them up with the faces. And I think that's something that is a lot of the movies that came out in this, like, the late aughts had that kind of special special effects where, like, we're just going to use the CGI, as I've said before on here, to just kind of fill in the cracks and not do everything. So you do still get the animatronics, but it's just a little bit cleaned up and it looks a little bit nicer, like, in your imagination, so you can't really see, you know, where the world ends and where the movie starts. It all blends together really seamlessly. I just wanted to touch on that before we completely...
Yeah, and I think that's something that's filmmaking has finally gotten back to doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, that specifically with, like, Star Wars, you know, sagas. The original trilogy started with practical effects and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and then we went into the prequel series and full-on blue green screen, and to the point that it was all computer generated. But then now coming back and getting to present day Star Wars filmmaking, now we have a mesh of both, and it's very much a good balance. And I think that it will hopefully be what we carry on into the future. And I think that they finally cracked the code in a way of there's just something with practicality that can never be recreated. Mm-hmm. And so practicality is always like the thing to do, because you know it has to be practical to have this you know believability. Like, you know, like it's kind of like what's that word, Uncanny Valley kind of situation. Mm-hmm. You can't fall into the valley, and the only way to not fall into the valley is to have practicality as much as you can, and then fill it in with the CGI, like you said. And yep. I think that's definitely, you know, because but to expand on, you know, the computer generated in other directions, going again with Star Wars, so the background that could be computer generated. They have that stage, that 360 stage that they film on, mm-hmm. sound stage that they film on, and that's believability because of depth perception and all that, and like that's more believable than things that are like, you know, in the foreground of the, you know, of the scene. So yeah,
and they're all just tools. Practical effects, computer animated effects are all just tools in the toolmaker's toolbox. And Spike Jonze has such a great eye for this kind of thing. You see it over and over in his films. And so I think that when you have someone who has a real vision and has the means, has a budget enough, has like talented people around him, as he did with, you know, the team on this is absolutely incredible, who are making these things that look like straight out of the book, but also like you could walk up and touch them. And that is so impressive. And it's, you know, it's really cool when something like this comes together, because a film isn't just made by one guy. It's not just made by Sendak or Jones or any of the people. It's made by everyone coming together.
Mm-hmm. It also contributes to the performance itself, you know, like
mm-hmm.
the performer having something physical right in front of them, especially yeah. when you're dealing with a child actor, mm-hmm. you know. I'm sure that allowed him as a kid to be more immersed and not have to like just like, you know, kids have imaginations, but you know, I would think that a child actor isn't like too trained to like kind of come up with something like that much, so to have something practical helps in the performance and the emotions that you get from your actors as well, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm a huge fucking defender of practical mm-hmm. effects. So like, I mean, there's no shadow of a doubt that I'm always going to defend it more, but I do love the blending of having practical effects, animatronics, using CGI to fill in the cracks, like you guys were saying. And also, too, it's just when you see something on film and you just go, I can probably touch that, it brings so much more emotion. You know, I love the Star Wars prequels, but there are times where, like, you know, there's like a scene where Anakin's running up a fucking hallway, and I'm like, really? That needed to be CGI? Like, you can tell it's CGI. And, you know, I'm not saying I hate, you know, it just looks a little shoddy, where I was like, eh. But when you see scenes like in this film, where the characters look furry and, like, you know, he's hugging them and he's touching them, you're like, damn, I feel like I can, you know, in your mind, it's kind of like when you read a book. You start describing that feeling in your mind, and you feel how you imagine how it feels and how it smells. I mean, one of the biggest fucking films that I've ever seen that really made me go like, holy shit, is John Carpenter's The Thing, where those effects are so fucking good and disgusting and gorgeously gross, where like sometimes I get nervous to go back and watch it because it's so like, oh, like I can feel it. If it was all CGI, I'd be fine with watching it all the time and be like, yeah, whatever, you know, it's, but something about those practical effects where it somehow it just gets into your mind and you go, I can touch that. Like if that was in front of me, I can feel that, and I can be like, holy shit, that is a fucking alien from space. Holy crap, that is a big furry monster with like big old horns and a funny nose. And I'm not gonna lie, I wanted to touch the bird guy monster so bad, like his sick mohawk. I was like, I just want to touch it so bad. Like, I want to see him eat food, because you're like, he's real, you know, to an extent. Yeah. So it's so for that stuff captures my imagination like all the time. So for a kid watching that, it's absolutely gratifying, and it's awesome to see.
Nice. Well, any final thoughts on the film here, guys?
It's an enjoyable movie. It depending on where you come from, you might relate to it a little bit more. But I think that on some level you'll relate to the movie for sure.
I think it's definitely like a simmer type of movie, because, you know, now I'm thinking about it, I'm kind of letting it simmer. I'm kind of like, okay, you know what? I get what they were trying to do. I get what Spike Jonze was trying to do and company. And I'm like, all right, you know what? It's not bad. Like I said, I don't hate it. Again, you know, I can suck the practical effects of dick all day. But just give it a watch and see what you think. And don't let it, you know, you got to let it simmer. You got to kind of think about it for a moment, maybe a couple of days. Because like Derek said, I might actually change my mind. I might be like, you know what? Because that happened to me with The Witch. I remember walking out of The Witch. And I was like, huh, it's not what I expected. And then days later, I was like, fuck, I really like that. So maybe I might change my mind. Maybe I won't, but we'll see. I mean, it's definitely a let it simmer.
Yeah. It's just a world that I love to vibe in and just kind of like live in for a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I definitely want to visit where the wild things are. I treat them a lot better. I'd help Carol out. And like, you're okay, Carol. You have friends. You have friends. You're okay.
Bug the fuck out of that bird, dude. I'd be like, dude, let me touch your mohawk.
No, I'd be like, hey, let me fix your arm. Let me put your arm.
I love
on.
When he's got the little stick arm. That was
That made me so sad. I was upset. Yeah. I was like, fuck Carol, dude.
But he is a good friend, though. That's the thing, is like, I liked how he was a good friend. He's like, he's understandable of Carol. Carol's just needs help, and he just wants to be there for him. And I think they all know that at some point, you know, Carol is going to learn that, you know, he is truly loved. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One last thing I will say. So, okay. I know you guys were saying that it was dark. I didn't feel like it was dark.
I didn't feel it too much either.
I didn't really, like,
I don't think it's for like a kids movie.
I feel like I've seen other movies, other kids movies, even me growing up, like I remember
Black Cauldron.
What was it? Little Nemo movie.
I fucking love the Black Cauldron.
I think Little Nemo, there was a fucking scene in that movie with like a door, and it always fucking scared the shit out of me. I felt that was dark, but with this one, I will say this, if when the bird guy got his arm ripped off and he fucking screamed in pain, that would have been dark. Like, that would have been very triggering. That's just my favorite right arm. I was like, oh,
favorite arm, Carol. Yeah.
I was like, okay, cool. It kind of brings in, it kind of brings in more of that imagination. So you're like, it still makes you feel safe. Yeah, like, I was shocked. Like, I was like, oh my God, his arm. And then he's like, oh, whatever. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Everything's fine.
Yep. Well, do you have a question of the week for us, Alan?
Question of the week. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I wasn't contemplating it.
Most impacting kids film that we have.
I would actually say, like, what kids book would you guys want to see adapted?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, they've done they've done so many of them already. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? Okay, it's not like a little kid's book, and there's already been a sort of an adaptation, but I would love to see, like, a movie trilogy for Animorphs, because that was yeah. my jam.
There's a possibility. I've been hearing rumbling.
There's always whispers about it. But yeah, like that was dark. Like if you want to like read something like dark for like a 7 to 10 year old, because that's the way I think the age I was right when there was coming out. Like that's dark. It deals with like genocide and like all these and like interstellar like war and like suicide and all this really intense and like PTSD. I that would be mine. Would be Animorphs.
A book series like this is a small book series. Well, there's
yeah, it could be like a, it could be a, no. it could be like a book
oh, no, series no, 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 no.
Yeah, or even yeah. like a YA.
Yeah.
Borderline YA. Borderline.
Yeah.
YA.
Yeah, but no, for a kid's book that I would really love, like on a la Carmen Sandiego like Netflix series
so
would be
good.
Nate the Great. I don't know if anybody knows Nate the Great. Nate the Great is this awesome book series of essentially this kid detective, but he's like on the verge of like Sherlock Holmes, but with a trench coat. He's awesome. I love Nate the Great. My mom introduced me to him, and so yeah. So he has like a dog that of course, and he always like needs to eat pancakes to think. That's his thinking food, and I love Nate the Great. I would really love a Netflix cartoon series of Nate the Great. So yeah.
Nice.
I think I would go with Neil Gaiman's The Graveyard Book. Mm. I think Ooh. That would be a cool little dark. It's not yeah. even that dark. Like it has dark themes, but I feel like it's like I don't know, like Neil Gaiman, I just love the way he writes. It just feels very comforting in a weird way, even though it's about like death and like ghosts and stuff like that, where I'm kind of more like, I could see them doing maybe like a cool little mini live action series or even like a 2-part movie. But I feel like I would dig that. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's essentially the Jungle Book in a graveyard. That's kind of mm-hmm. what it's usually compared to.
Yeah. A book sequel to a movie sequel that would also be a movie sequel that I was just thinking of also is it's a sequel book to Holes. It's called Small Steps. It's about the armpit character in Holes. It tells like this story about him after, of course, Camp Green Lake. And I enjoyed that book a little bit more than the actual Holes. I think it was such a really good book. It's like a different kind of story than Holes is, and I would really love like a adaptation of that book as well.
And read that because I love Holes.
Yeah, it's not the same as Holes. Like there's a mystery involved in it, but
I mean I love that author just in general.
Oh like, yeah, so. I love Lewis Zachar. Yeah, and but then another one that I just kind of like thought of. Is that kind of that graphic novel that had just came out of a kid's graphic novel Amulet? That would be also a really good like animation series as well.
Yeah. Mm. Well, cool. Well, thank you guys, and thanks everyone for listening. Like we said, we are the Undercast Company, and we do a new episode of this show Underrated every other week. If you'd like to hear more of us, though, we do a couple other podcasts. Whenever there's a new Marvel thing, I have my podcast, Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones. On the first of every month, Ariel also has her podcast, You've Never Seen, where we are introduced to movies that we probably should have seen by this point, one of us, by the others of us. We're gearing up to launch my season 2 of my TV podcast, Gateway Episodes. Once we hit 10 patrons, we're going to be releasing that. We're getting pretty close, so you guys want to hear that, sign up on Patreon, and we've already got the first episode out for patrons, and we do a lot of other cool stuff on our Patreon as well. We call it the Undercast Film Club. Got exclusive episodes. We did one recently on Sonic the Hedgehog 2, as part of our 8-bit cinema video game series. I did an Oscar recap. We do all kinds of really cool stuff. We've got a lot more stuff planned out. If you guys want to give us any suggestions for underrated movies that we should cover. We would love to hear them. Just let us know. You can email us at undercastcompany@gmail.com or just let us know on Instagram, Undercast Company on Instagram, Undercast Co on Twitter, on Facebook, all that good stuff. Tell us what you'd like to hear us cover, and we might just do it. But I think that about wraps it up. I have been Derek, and thank you guys for listening.
Thanks for being amazing, everyone.
Well, everybody, take it easy, and I want to give a big shout out to Ireland. Thank you guys so much for putting us on number 9.
Yes.
The podcasting for movie reviews, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We hit number 9 on the film reviews charts over on Ireland. So thank you. I mean, and Ariel's heritage right there.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah! So thank you guys so much. We want to hear from you guys. But yeah, thank you so much. Big thank yous all around. Firm handshakes all around. But yeah, thank you guys, and take it easy.